Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Here we are, 2011. Well, here's what I want to do. Since most of the people are still on vacation or hungover or not even focused on the news, I'll do the news later. I mean, the main news to me is, what in the world is Big Sis doing in Qatar or Qatar? Or why is she in a country nobody seems to know how to pronounce in the media? I've heard it pronounced as Qatar, gutter. No one knows how to pronounce the country, yet she's there teaching them how to maintain their borders. Now, of all people on earth, you would think that it wouldn't be Big Sis Napolitano teaching foreign nations how to protect their borders, since she is suing the people of the state of Arizona who want to protect their borders. But then again, I've given up trying to figure out what the Obama administration does, because I don't think they know what they're doing. As you well understand, I'm convinced that they're the most incompetent, corrupt administration in American history. So I'd like to begin on the Savage Nation on this Blue Monday with a story about New Year's Eve. How's that? Does that work for you? Now, here's what I did New Year's Eve. You think famous Michael Savage, you could have an audience of 20,000, and I could, 10,000, 20,000. I could fill an auditorium anywhere. I haven't given a live performance in 5 years. I intend to give a few this year. I've decided to come out of public retirement. That is retirement from public appearances. I'm going to do a number of them around the country this year, God willing, if I have the strength and the desire to do so. So anyway, I went out with Mrs. Savage and two friends New Year's Eve to a place that I frequent for the last 30 years on and off. It's a Basque restaurant up in San Rafael, California. Great place. It's like a home for me, called the Chalet Basque. And I've known the owner, Roger, since, I don't know, the 70s. The reason I like it is it's like stepping back into a French village. And it's just where the food's good, the prices are nice, no one bothers you, okay? So it was crowded, full. The Basque people have always fascinated me, by the way. You don't know much about them. You think that they're just like everybody else, but you don't know that they're not like everybody else. Nobody knows exactly where the Basque people came from. Some say they have lived in that area of Europe since Cro-Magnon man first roamed Europe. And people estimate how long they've lived in that area, from 10,000 to 75,000 years ago. I'm talking about the Basque people. That's on the Iberian Peninsula. It's an area between Spain and France. But no one is sure about the origins of the Basque people themselves. Did you know that their language has no roots in any other language on Earth, which is very unusual? I don't think you know this. But the Basque people speak a language known as Euskara, or if I'm mispronouncing it, you'll have to pardon me. They speak a language that has no relationship to any other language on earth. It is not a Romance language. It is not related to any of the English language roots that we know of. There are theories about it. And so, yeah, and they're also into caves and, you know, caving and things like that. But by and large, I like the Basque people. I've never met a Basque person I didn't get along with for some strange reason. And they're very well known as blood type O, incidentally, as I am a blood type O. And blood type O are universal donors. We get along with everybody, except those who would do us harm, just like the Basque people. Do you know that the Basque were successful in repelling the Muslim invaders in the 13th century? I don't think you know this. That's right. They fought them off in the Pyrenees. There's much history that many of us don't know much about, and I try to work in a piece here and there. So they're great mountain people, and Roger comes from a family that's been there forever. And he has an inn back in the old country that's hundreds and hundreds of years old, right? So I go there New Year's Eve. That's filled with mainly you know, middle-aged, nice people that don't bother anybody. Luckily, I got there just as some of the people with children were leaving. I have nothing against children, but I can't eat around them. I raised my own children. I don't want to be around children when I have dinner. I get indigestion when they screech. Worse yet, when they start playing the drums on the table with knives and forks or hitting a glass. It just does something to my sense of cuisine and, you know, how I feel about food. So anyway, we're eating. So he says to me, you know who just left? I said, who? He said, this is very surprising. Remember, I'm a Mr. Ultra-conservative right-winger, right? Who just left the restaurant? He says, well, who is performing up at the Marin Civic Center tonight for New Year's Eve? I said, who? He said, Bill Maher. I said, what is he, hungry for money? That he's doing live performances? I thought he's a big shot in HBO. I guess he needs the money. Who knows why? But I said, I filled that auditorium many a time. Many of you listening to this show have been there when I've done the live performances at Marin Civic Center. I may do one this year, by the way, as well. So I said, well, that's okay. You know, Marin's filled with psycho-liberals from the other side of the tracks. I'm sure they would like to listen to his anti-American, anti-family, anti-church drivel. They said, well, no, he wasn't here. I said, well, who was here? They said, well, Robin Williams was just here for dinner. I said, that's interesting. At least he has good taste in food. Now, that's not a big deal unto itself. And then, as I'm enjoying dinner, the waitress, who I like very much, Linda, gives me a book that she wrote. A little book. It's called If These Tables Could Talk, Worthy Tales from Soup to Nuts by Linda Hepworth. And I hope Linda's listening because she's a lovely person. She always has cute, non-dirty jokes that make me laugh. In fact, they're so cute and so non-dirty that I can tell them on the radio. They're humble. They're not the kind of joke that, let us say, people in West Hollywood would find amusing. Okay? So she wrote a book about the various people who've come in the restaurant over the years. And one of the entries is called Famous Radio Man. I think you know who it is. And I'm going to read that to you because it's very interesting. And then after I read you Famous Radio Man from Linda's book, I am going to tell you about a dream I had last night. That is, those of you who have listened to this show for 16 or 17 years now know that every once in a while I have what I consider to be a profound dream that influences the course of my life. God spoke to me last night in my dreams. And I'm going to tell you what the dream was, and I'm going to read to you from Psalms because you're not going to believe it. So whether or not you're a believer in God, a believer in the Bible, it doesn't matter. As long as you're a believer in the Savage Nation, I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, guys and girls and guys and dolls and savages and savagettes, we're back on the Savage Nation post-New Year's Eve. Half the audience is still either gone or not here. I know that. It's okay. I know everything about radio that hasn't even been written yet. I'll write the book on it. So before I continue by telling you the story, a famous radio guy comes into the restaurant, famous radio man. I'm going to read you some headlines from michaelsavage.com. 1,000 scientists challenge global warming in new report. Tyranny by decree. Over the past year, it has become obvious that what leftists cannot win at the ballot box, they will accomplish via bureaucratic dictate. No kidding, Obama. Schwarzenegger cuts prison sentence of Democrat political crony's son. Did you know about that? Won't make it to your local paper? Arnold Schwarzenegger reduced the prison sentence of the son of former Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez, Esteban Nunez, who participated in the killing of a college student. Thank you, Arnold. Here's a really shocker. Ex-Reagan Bush aide killed and dumped in a landfill. This is a frightening story. He's 66 years old. He's a decorated Vietnam veteran. Last seen getting off an Amtrak train in Delaware, and he's found in a garbage dump. No comment. GOP's Darrell Issa outlines a broad array of probes. Have you seen what's going on in Egypt? The Muslims are blowing up churches and killing Christians. That shouldn't bother you, though. After all, you should listen to all of the vermin in Hollywood who tell you that the Christians are expendable and don't belong in the Middle East anyway. Christians out of the Middle East, Jews out of the Middle East. How about a trade? Can we do that? They've been bombing churches now in the Middle East for a while, and New Year's Day, there was a suicide bombing of a church, a Coptic Christian church that killed 21 and injured 80. The Christians are being driven out of the Middle East while your, shall I say, president does nothing. So those are some of the news stories that I thought I should share with you on the Savage Nation, other than 10,000 fish found dead in a river in Arkansas and 1,000 blackbirds that fell out of the sky in Arkansas. Was that in Arkansas? I know that 10,000 fish were found dead in the river. We can't blame Bill Clinton. Did he visit Arkansas during the holidays? I don't know. It could be that they died of fright. 1,000 blackbirds have fallen from the sky in the city. Where'd that happen? Thousands of fish in the Arkansas River. We can't blame Bill Clinton unless we can. Maybe Al Gore went and visited. It's not funny. It's frightening. Why are birds falling out of the sky? Why are fish dying in the rivers? You know it has nothing to do with global warming. An ornithologist said that the bird showed physical trauma and that the flock could have been hit by lightning or high-altitude hail. All right, well, that's a rational explanation. 1-800-449-8255. Now on to this. Famous radio man. This is from the book, If These Tables Could Talk, by Linda Hepworth from the Basque Restaurant. You can bask in my story. Here's how it goes. I didn't write it now. She did. It's about me. Here's what she had to... See, here's when someone writes about you, you don't know what anyone's going to say, right? So you're always trepidatious. So I read what she wrote. It's actually very cute. It's about Teddy and me. You ready? Famous radio man. My boss, Roger, she writes, has a longtime friend who was a well-known radio host. This gentleman and his wife frequent the restaurant, and it is especially nice when Roger can sit down and spend time with them. They've all known each other for 30 years. The radio man often mentioned our restaurant on the radio, although never by name, but my friends called me saying that they had heard he had been there. She's talking about Le Chalet Basque. The radio man usually comes in with a hat on and his collar pulled up, trying to remain incognito, and sits in the back room alone as his voice is so recognizable. On occasion, he brings his little dog. The dog sits on the chair beside him and is treated to a hamburger well done with no seasoning the way the dog likes it. One time they brought the dog, Teddy, and he was sitting on his chair as usual. The radio man told me that the dog had already eaten and he wouldn't be getting his hamburger today. The dog heard this, cocked his little head and whimpered. We all erupted in laughter and the dog got his hamburger. The biggest event with this famous man was when I lost his credit card. He gave me the card and at the same time asked for a to-go bag, which I had to get in the kitchen. I didn't want to leave the card unattended near the credit card machine, so I took it with me into the kitchen. It disappeared just like that, vanished from its little tray. What do I do? Honesty is the best policy, so I went to the radio man and told him that I had just lost his credit card. He was very nice about it and started looking in his pocket saying, well, maybe he hadn't given it to me. But he had given it to me, and I had lost it. I panicked. I looked everywhere. Just inside the kitchen door was a big laundry bag with all the dirty tablecloths. The boss, now aware of what was going on, screamed at me, of all the people! And then he pitched into the dirty linen, going through everything, no card. I went back out to the famous customer who was waiting to leave with his driver. I told him that we hadn't found it. He was so nice about it, he said, look at you, so nervous over a piece of plastic. Don't worry, I'll cancel it when I get home. His voice was so calm, I almost started to feel better. Then he said, my wife's going to freak. I thought, oh dear me, she said. The radio man told me that I would probably find it 5 minutes after he left. So he and the driver went out to the parking lot to the car. I went into the kitchen, heaving a huge sigh of disappointment. As I relaxed and stepped back, there was the card to the left of me on the floor, hiding under a little shelf. It had apparently aeroplaned a few feet. I grabbed the card and rushed into the restaurant just as the driver was coming back in. The to-go bag had leaked and he was coming back in to get it rewrapped. With great relief, I handed the card to the driver. I still see the radio man. We're friends now, and I even asked him for an autograph from my aunt and uncle. We never mentioned the incident, and I hope he never told his wife. It's cute, okay? It doesn't shake the world up, but it just shows you something. How do you like that? I'm not what you think I am. I'm actually a nice person. I guarantee if a liberal, if they lost his credit card, he would have called the police, and it would have been black helicopters. Imagine what would have happened if Bill Maher had lost it, if someone had lost his credit card, what would have gone on in there? You could just imagine. The threats, the lawsuits, the this, the that. So now I'll tell you my dream, because when I come back, it's going to relate to the rest of that segment, okay? It's a secondary dream. I know many of you don't want to hear it, but many of you can't wait to hear it. So raise your hands. You want to hear this dream or not? Raise your hands. I'll know if you're raising your hand. Because I have a fifth, a sixth, seventh sense for radio. Okay, I see the hands. There's a sea of hands out there. Here's the dream. I am with my two dogs, Teddy and his little companion. I call her the goat. She's about a 1 or 2 pound white poodle. Teddy kind of dog. Teddy is the performing artist dog. He doesn't pay much attention to her, but he loves her. I know he does. But they have a great relationship, like a horse and a goat, a thoroughbred horse and a goat, right? And then there's me and Mrs. S are in this dream. And then there's another character. He looks like, who's the guy who played James Bond? Sean something? What's his name? The English actor? Sean Connery, but he's older now in the dream. He's maybe 75, 80. He's a little stoop, but he's very dignified, still looks good, and he's in the dream with us, right? We're walking with the dogs in a very familiar place that I know very well, and we come to the edge of a parking lot near a yacht harbor building, which then adjacent to which is a large, beautiful green lawn which goes out to the San Francisco Bay. And we have to cross from this parking lot to the green lawn. Now, in real life, there's no stream there. But when we got there in the dream, there was a running water. It was a creek of running water. But it wasn't very deep. It was very shallow, and there were very large, clear stones right underneath the water. And I said, don't worry. The dogs can walk right through the water. It's very shallow, and they will walk on the rocks, and we'll get across to the clean, bright uplands of the lawn across the way. As I step across myself, getting my feet wet up to my ankles, the Sean Connery character takes my Bible. Remember I told you I have a blue Old Testament that I've read for years on this show? It's a collector's item. There must be 150 Post-its in that Bible. And he threw the Bible to me, and it fell in the water, and it was soaking wet, and I had it fished out with a net, and it was useless to me. It was totally and absolutely useless. The water had gotten through all the pages of the Bible. The Old Testament was completely wet. Then Mrs. S. holds up two antique botanical books. And I say, don't throw them. Leave them there. And I'll tell you more about the dream when I come back.
Savage.
And friends just can't be
All right, so we're back on the Savage Nation. Happy New Year to all of you, 2011. We're going to have the Numbers Guy on in the next hour. And the Numbers Guy is going to tell you a number of things. 1-800-449-8255. This is Michael Savage. I'm live, in case you don't. Some of you don't know if I'm live. I'm living. For if you pinch me, do I not scream? For if you prick me, do I not bleed? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, how do I prove I'm alive? How can I prove it? I mean, if you pinch me, if you tickle me, do I not laugh? If you pinch me, do I not? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you got to read Shakespeare to know the joke I just told you. So I'm telling you the dream again. You ready for it or not? Mrs. S and I, the two dogs, and a guy who looks like Sean Connery, are about to cross over from this area over to a green pasture, a green meadow, beautiful uplands, gorgeous. And instead of it being an easy walk, there's all of a sudden the creek has bubbled up out of nowhere. So I cross over and say, don't worry about the dogs. They can get across very easily. It's a shallow little water, and the rocks are apparent. The dogs are going to get right through it. The Sean Connery character takes my Bible, my Old Testament, which I've had for 30 years. He throws it to me, and it falls in the water. It is completely waterlogged and useless. I fish it out. Then Mrs. S. is on the other side, and she holds up two old botanical texts that I own. And she says, hold, I'll throw them to you. And I say, no, no, don't throw the books across the water. Put them down. They'll be there when we come back from the sunny lawn. And that's the end of the dream. She say, well, what the heck is the big deal, Michael? Well, I'm into interpretation of dreams, and I've self-interpreted dreams all my life, and I've interpreted my children's dreams when they were young, and I've sometimes done friends' dreams. I know what this means. That's why we played Bridge Over Troubled Waters. Well, I told this dream to a friend of mine today on the radio. A friend of mine is a devout Christian. And he then called me up and he said, Michael, I got the hair on my neck stood up when you told me that dream because I found your dream in Psalms. And I'm not a big biblical guy. And he actually said, you have to read the Psalms. And then he said, you got to read the Psalms 18 to 20, particularly Psalm 19, verses 16. And you know why I'm going to read this to you? It has nothing to do with me. I'm going to read this to you because America right now is in the doldrums. America has virtually no leadership. We don't have a president. We don't have anyone in the top echelon of the military who is willing to lead the troops in a spiritual way to give them the strength to fight our enemies who are going to try to wipe us off the planet. The Chinese have wiped us off the economic planet. The radical Muslims are going to wipe us off the planet unless we get the guts to stand up to them, as sure as I'm sitting here. And we do not have one figure in America willing to stand up and to inspire the people. Not one. I often wonder, how do the boys go to war when they're not even allowed to identify the enemy? How do you go to war when you have Janet Napolitano, big sis, over there telling them how to defend their borders when she won't even protect our borders? So I'm going to read you what I think a military leader ought to read to the troops before they go into battle. And it's Psalm 18, verse 16. He sent from above. He took me. He drew me out of many waters. My friend told me to read this. He delivered me from my strong enemy, from those who hated me, for they were too strong for me. They confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my support. He also brought me out unto a broad place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. Now, let me pause there. Does that not match the dream I just told you? He goes on. The Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands, he has recompensed me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord and have not wickedly departed from my God. And then it goes on. And then here it gets interesting. Here's what I would suggest every commanding general, every field commander read to his troops before they go out to face the enemy who is so horrible. And here is what you should read to the troops. Or here, let's say you yourself are facing enemies and you don't know if you can win and you don't believe in anything. Well, you can't win if you don't believe in anything, I'll tell you right now. If you don't believe in anything, you're going to lose. I don't care what your battle is. But if you believe in God, nothing can defeat you. Nothing can defeat you if you have God within you. It's been said tens of thousands of times from the beginning of our religion, from the beginning of Judaism and Christianity. When I say our religion, I'm very specific in what I'm talking about. Okay? From the beginning, those who have believed in God have always had the strength to face virtually anything. So let me read you what should be read to our troops before they go into battle. You're listening to the Savage Nation. I have pursued my enemies and overtaken them, neither did I turn back again until they were destroyed. I have wounded them so that they could not rise. They have fallen under my feet. For you have armed me with strength for the battle. You have subdued under me those who rose up against me. You have also given me the necks of my enemies so that I destroyed those who hated me. They cried out, but there was none to save, even to the Lord, but he did not answer them. Then I beat them as fine as the dust before the wind. I cast them out like dirt in the streets. You have delivered me from the strivings of the people. You have made me the head of the nations. A people I have not known shall serve me. As soon as they hear of me, they obey me. The foreigners submit to me. The foreigners fade away and come frightened from their hideouts. The Lord lives. Blessed be my rock. Let the God of my salvation be exalted. It is God who avenges me and subdues the peoples under me. He delivers me from my enemies. Now, I could pause right here, and the reason I'm going to pause right here is to tell you that reading these psalms, this is Psalm 18, verses 37 through approximately 44, you learn a few things about the Old Testament, which is where the psalms come from, by the way. But I'm not reading from my original Old Testament. I'll tell you in a moment which book I'm reading from and where I got it. You are learning that Christianity is not a religion of pacifism. You are learning perhaps for the first time that the meaning of turn thy cheek, if a man slaps you, turn the other cheek, has only a limited meaning. You are learning maybe for the first time that Christianity is a muscular religion. It is a religion of warfare if it need be. Do you understand that? You've had a bunch of school moms and a bunch of pacifists and communists distort the Bible for you. You've had a distortion of Christianity itself. They've led you to believe that you should be the patsy of the world, that you should let every person on earth run all over you, and you should thank them for kicking you in the teeth. Read what the Psalms say. Then I beat them as fine as the dust before the wind. I cast them out like dirt in the streets. You have also given me the necks of my enemies, so that I destroyed those who hated me. They cried out, but there was no one there to save, even to the Lord, but he did not answer them. When you have God on your side, and believe me, there was a time in this country when every soldier who went into battle was given a battle hymn in order to face the enemy. I don't know, whoever the enemy may have been, whatever the war may have been. The commander understood that the men needed inner strength in order to have the... They could have all the weapons in the world. They could have the best machine guns. They could have the sharpest sights. They could have sights that see around corners. But if they don't have God on their side, very often they don't have the will to fight and the will to live and the will to kill. You understand what I'm saying to you? What's missing in our military ethos today because of the psychotic anti-American, anti-military, anti-Christian elements that have crept into every aspect of our society? You won't even hear these words in a church anymore. The words that I just read to you, you are likely not even to hear in your own church because of the timidity that has now plagued the very church itself. Now I'm going to tell you another story now that I've read you the Psalms. Because I know what the dream was. It was bridge over troubled waters, and it was that God is with me, and that I will prevail, and my enemies will be slain. I can tell you that right now. I am reading to you, not from my old blue Old Testament, which fell into the water in my dream. I don't even know where it is. It's in one of my other locations. I am reading to you from a Gideon Bible that I picked up in a hotel room, I must tell you, about 2-3 months ago, which is a combination of the books of the Old and New Testaments. This is not a blue Bible that I'm reading from. This is a red Bible that I'm reading from. I'll let you figure it out. I mean, you can go back to any allegory you want. The red and the blue phases of Picasso are very well known. How about the blue and the red phases of Michael Savage's religious explorations? Because I am setting out on a new road as of today. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Now, if you want to comment on any of the topics I've touched on thus far, and I've touched on quite a few, and I will recap for you. I read from the book and the restaurant and the dog. I told you about New Year's Eve. I told you about the Basque people and their utterly unknown origins. I have told you about 4 or 5 major news stories from MichaelSavage.com. I told you about my prophetic dream over troubled waters, and I have read to you from the Psalms. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Houston, Texas, Clifford, you're first up in the Bible Belt. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind, Clifford?
Yes, sir. I had a sort of a universal interpretation of that dream that you had.
I'd love to hear it. Let's hear it. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Yes, sir. You have to carry the word of God for yourself. Others will mishandle it. It'll become watered down and useless. You have to carry it for yourself.
That is absolutely truth. That is 100% true. Over the Christmas holidays, I must tell you, I walked away from God and I lost faith in God. I lost faith in religion. I lost faith in anything to do with the Bible. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm telling you point blank. I go in and out of faith. But I don't feel ashamed to admit it to my audience. Because one thing you're not going to get from me is a bunch of malarkey. And I'm also telling you I'm in good company, because when we read Mother Teresa herself, she admitted that she had lapses of faith throughout her whole life, that she didn't know if God actually existed. And yet she went on in the darkness of not knowing anyway. You see what I'm getting at? In other words, there are people who never lose faith. Then there are some who never have faith. And then there are people like myself, who are most people, who sometimes have faith and sometimes don't have faith. In other words, in that way, I'm much like every man. Do you understand that?
Yes.
See, I'm not trying to put myself above the people who listen to this show. I am like most men. Sometimes I have faith, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I have faith, I can almost touch out and reach God and touch him. Some days he's not there. I don't even know where he is. I don't know what happened. I think it's all a fantasy. Perhaps I watched too much Nat Geo. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. I say tonight, my Lord, yes, he is.
Well, I don't know whether to call it Brother Billy's Hour here. Remember, I told you about Brother Billy years ago. I mean, I could do a revival meeting any day, but, you know, it's the beginning of a new year. And America right now is eyeless in Gaza. We are faithless. We have a leader who is not a leader. We don't even know where he was born. The man is still on vacation when everyone else is at work. He spent the $1.5 million for his Christmas holiday. He has a 20-man motorcade to visit his childhood friend in Hawaii. His wife, the first lady, the hamburger-eating, the ice-cream-eating Michelle Obama, is seen inside the SUV with earplugs on listening to some music. These really don't look like the president and the first lady to me, the way they behave. We have no leadership. In Congress, you have Boehner, the crybaby. You have the other one who breaks down in tears every other day. You have two military men who are a disgrace. A defense secretary who runs a phony poll on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He doesn't even poll the combat veterans. He polls people in the Coast Guard and their families. And then he says everybody wants Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed. This man is the biggest disgrace in the history of the military, along with the other public relations phony that they have as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Nobody even knows where they came from. It's all filled with empty men, empty suits, the hollow man. Read T.S. Eliot, the hollow man. We have the hollow man running everything. There's very little inspiration in this country today, which is why the Chinese have ate us for breakfast and ate our breakfast, and why the radical Islamists can't be defeated, because we could defeat them if we really wanted to defeat them, but nobody will even tell the troops why we're there. That's why I say to you, every day it gets crazier. There's no leadership. We wake up this morning and read a story. Our Treasury Secretary, Geithner aides reaped millions working for banks and hedge funds. Some of Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner's closest aides, none of whom face Senate confirmation, earn millions of dollars a year working for Goldman Sachs Group, Inc., Citigroup, Inc., and other Wall Street firms, according to financial disclosure forms. This just came out today from Bloomberg.com. Then I have an article here I saved, which is the biggest of all, in my mind, of hypocrisy, is this guy Bloomberg from New York. He makes my flesh crawl. There are certain words for a man like him that escape me right now, but you can pick any adjective out of a basket of horrors, and they would apply to Michael Bloomberg. The only thing Bloomberg proves is that a billionaire can be a moron. This story is from December 24th from the New York Post. I saved it for today's show. City Hall Ghost wrote Ground Zero Mosque's letter. Did you hear this story? I bet you didn't even see this story. Emails between the commissioner of the mayor's community affairs unit and the backers of the Ground Zero Mosque. She wrote the emails for the Ground Zero Mosque con men. She wrote them. They came out of Mayor Bloomberg's office. Who was the first to tell you follow the money? Who was the first to tell you the reason Bloomberg is so enamored of this mosque has nothing to do with religion, nothing to do with decency, nothing to do with liberalism? I said, follow the money. And sure enough, of course, Bloomberg's interests spread throughout the Middle East. But here's the kicker. The mayor was touting government not being involved in religion, and here we see the mayor's staffer assisting in a PR campaign on behalf of a mosque and Islamic center. You don't think this is improper? Well, I know it's improper. Michael Bloomberg should be ashamed of himself, but a man as brazen as he probably has lost shame a long time ago. And so they write emails on behalf of the Ground Zero Mosque to so-called Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, the developer, or Imam, whatever he may be, and they tell him how to position himself to get the mosque built? Yeah, all right. Separation of church and state when it's convenient. Geithner aides reaped millions working for banks and hedge funds. Something new about that? How about the president visiting Hawaii costing us $1.5 million for his little vacation? And then he has a 20-man motorcade to go visit a childhood friend in Hawaii. Why didn't he stay at Dillingham Airfield? Why didn't he stay where Bill Clinton used to stay? Why did they spend $1 million on Mr. Obama's return trip from Washington on Air Force One? Why did they spend $63,000 on an early flight bringing Mrs. Obama and the children to Hawaii ahead of the president? Why did they spend $38,000 for the winter White House that the president has rented for his family in Kailua Beach? Why did they spend $16,000 to rent beachfront homes for Secret Service and Navy SEALs when they could have stayed in an adjacent military base? Why did they spend $134,000 for 24 White House staff to stay at the Moana Hotel? Why did they pay $251,000 in HPD police overtime? Why did they spend $10,000 for an ambulance to be on hand at all times? They could have stayed at Dillingham Air Force Base, which is right nearby. So we are living in very strange times. Not only is there no leadership, there's total corruption. There is total corruption. And Obama is sort of a minor pharaonic figure, is how I would put him in my next book. A minor pharaonic figure is how I would put him. I mean, the emperor doesn't apply because he's not an emperor. But he is a minor pharaonic figure. In fact, he even looks somewhat Egyptian in some place. In some profiles, he almost has the look of an Egyptian. He is a mild pharaonic figure, and he's behaving accordingly. So let's go back to the callers on the Savage Nation. Time is short. Anthony in New York on WOR. What's on your mind? Fire away. Go ahead.
Hey, listen, how come you say if you believe in God, God will protect you? But how many people believe in God, like Martin Luther King and all these vans, these Christian choirs going off the cliff, and they believe in God, they just sung at a church. And
that's right, and in World War II, millions and millions, 30s of millions of Christians died, and the whole city of Leningrad was wiped out, and the whole city of Stalingrad was wiped out, probably filled with Orthodox Christians. It's one of the paradoxes. I have no answer for you. I've wondered about it myself when I used to watch boxing matches as a kid, and both fighters would have a cross around their neck, and they'd get on the ground and they would pray to Jesus at the same time. And I would ask myself, how could both fighters believe God will have them win? I didn't understand that one myself, Anthony, because I'm not God, I'm only a man.
Beautiful. Beautiful, but your wife and your daughter are on it. You're doing political.
Those who believe have something in themselves that those who don't.
Savage.
Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. You know, over the Christmas vacation, the biggest news story, the single biggest news story, is that Obama sold out America with a little help from his Republican friends. And I led with this story. It's been on my website for 2 weeks now. Obama's nuke deal, treason, ? See what's in the Star Treaty, pages 269 to 274. And I say that the Socialist Democrat Party sold us out to Russia. I warned you about this for the months leading up to this last-minute sellout of America. I tried to stop it. I failed. I admitted I wrote a whole chapter on the Star Treaty. It's all in trickle-up poverty. I'm not trying to sell you a book. It did very well indeed. Those of you who bought the book know that I spelled out what Obama actually did to us. But did you actually expect, I think it was 8 Republicans would join in signing the Star Treaty? Did you know that Scott Brown, who I called a fraud and a phony from day 3, that I was the first one to warn you that Scott Brown was nothing but a naked politician? I told you that from the beginning. I saw it coming. But I didn't realize that they would go as far as to give up our national security so nakedly and so overtly as they did with the Star Treaty. Tyranny by Decree, it has been written by Robert Knight in an article on MichaelSavage.com. He says that over the past year, it's become obvious that what leftists cannot win at the ballot box, they will accomplish via bureaucratic dictate. Well, with the Republican Party being what it is, they don't need bureaucratic dictate. They've got enough quislings in the Republican Party to virtually run this country, let us say, off the rails, completely off the rails. And so that's why I say you can get your politics any way you want, newspapers, radio, television, other radio shows. You got all of the cable channels, and I myself can't watch much of it anymore. There's only so much news I can absorb without throwing my hands up in disgust. I see a president, a minor pharaonic figure, sort of a minor pharaonic figure, that's all he really is, acting at the role of president. I see as Treasury Secretary Geithner, whose friends have made millions of dollars on Wall Street, a guy who's acting as Treasury Secretary when you know he's just a front man for the real powers that be. Wherever I turn, I see shills. I see Janet Napolitano, big sis, the woman who refuses to close the borders with Mexico despite the drugs and the gangs. And here she is over in Qatar or Qatar or Afghanistan telling them how they can control border security. It gets preposterous, but it isn't preposterous. We're literally losing our nation. And let me tell you something. You can call me anything you want, but you better get it right. I'm simply a conservative nationalist patriot. Forget the party affiliation. I don't want a party affiliation. I'm a conservative nationalist patriot. It's as simple as that. I'm also an animal rights advocate. I'm also an ardent conservationist. So if you want to put me into a little box, you're going to find out that there is no little box in which you can quietly put Michael Savage. Remember your tender mercies. Where did that come from? Remember, O Lord, your tender mercies and your loving kindnesses, for they are from of old. That's from Psalms. But listen to the last Psalm in 25. Redeem Israel, O God, out of all their troubles. Israel was saved in our lifetime. Israel rose from the ashes of history and was reformulated in our lifetime. And who are the greatest supporters of Israel other than some of the Israelis? Not all of us today. It's that scary to believe that. And I don't even like the word scary, but it's that frightening to believe it's true. Who are the greatest supporters of the nation of Israel on this earth? The conservative, fundamentalist Christian is the greatest supporters of are the greatest supporters of Israel. And who are the greatest disdainers and haters of Israel, other than the radical Islamists who would like to wipe the Jews off the earth and drive them into the sea? Who hates Israel more than they? The socialists, the communists in the United States of America and Europe. They are the greatest threat to Israel, and many of them are of Jewish descent. They are of Jewish heritage, but they have as much relationship to their religion as a polar bear does. They are the greatest threat to the survival of Israel. You take a look at the journalistic community and how the articles, virtually every article where an Israeli defends himself is turned into something evil. Every rocket that's fired by a Palestinian or by one of the members of the other side, let's put it to you that way, is somehow a self-defense act, an act of self-defense. You see almost no vitriol from the members of the so-called journalistic corps for Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, rightly defined by yours truly. Ahmadinejad is the Hitler of our time. He is the reincarnation of Hitler of our time. And who do we have in South America? We have a buffoon named Chavez who is a duplicate of Mussolini, only instead of speaking Italian, he speaks Spanish. And who is there shaking his hand and hobnobbing with him? None other than the lifetime Leninist Hillary Rodham Clinton. Instead of chastising him for doing business with Iran, instead of chastising Chavez for stealing property that was not his, Hillary Clinton rewards Chavez for his criminal acts. So we're living in times that people are very rightly so, not strange, they're worried. They don't know where the country is. They don't know where the center of the country is. They don't know who to believe in. People don't know where to turn. You're going to turn to that creation, Obama the Destroyer? You're going to tell yourself that's really a leader? That man really cares for America? That man really has America's interests at heart? You're going to believe that? I don't believe it, not for a second. He wouldn't be the first, nor will he be the last charlatan to sit inside Pennsylvania Avenue. But it's what we have right now. The Congress, with your hard work, with the hard work of talk radio and the internet, 70 people were thrown out of Congress because they were into the opposite of what America stands for. So 70 of them got thrown out. And you thought that we had a majority all of a sudden. And what did these traitorous SOBs do during the so-called last days of their reign of terror? They passed so many different treaties. So many horrendous strikes against the heart of America, the worst being the START treaty. They sold us down the river. They gave away one-third of our nuclear stockpile. They agreed to give up 50% of our strategic bombers and 50% of our nuclear submarines. Not one newspaper that I know of wrote that. Not one of the schmucks in the news media even bothered to read the Star Treaty. The same schmucks who call themselves journalists who never read the health care bill. I read it. It's in my book. I wrote a whole chapter on what it actually has in it. That's right. So we'll see a lot of sound and fury coming out of the John Boehners, the pink shirts, I call them. Let's just call the Republicans the pink shirts for the sake of identity coming forward in the weeks and months to come forward. Let's call them the pink shirts. Because that's what they seem to be to me, the pink shirts. They're sort of pinkos. They're not quite as red as the Democrats. So we'll call them pinkos. And we'll just name them, since that's an old phrase, pinko. We'll now call the Republicans the pink shirts. Because that's about all they're... To me, that's the most representative color for them right now. You don't know where they're going to come down on anything. Oh, they'll make a lot of sound and fury about repealing Obamacare. And I suppose at the end of the day, they'll get some of the most draconian elements of Obamacare thrown out, but they'll never go for the heart and soul of it, because they are also big government parties. The Republican Party, make no mistake about it, feasted on the body politic for 8 straight years under the great George Bush. The great George Bush, who the wall banger can't seem to get enough of his slavish worship out of his system for. The wall banger, every minute kissing George Bush's ring. Every minute telling you how great George Bush was. Every minute reinventing George Bush. Every minute reinventing the Bush regime into something it never was. The same thing with the golfer. Every day. Not one word of criticism, nor one word of reality. The fact of the matter is, he built the government up to what we have today. He is the one who expanded government beyond any of the previous borders of the previous 3 administrations. It was Bush who did it. It was Bush who gave us No Child Left Behind. I can name 5 things that Bush did that were so different than what you would have expected from a so-called conservative Republican. And who was it who called George Bush a fiscal socialist? Long before the end of his regime, it was Michael Savage, because I saw what he was doing to the... Talking about the past is there and of sour grapes. We're now living in 2011. We're going forward. We're looking forward. And so I started the show by telling you about my New Year's Eve in a little Basque restaurant. I read you a story about myself and Teddy as written by one of the waitress in there, Linda, in Chalet Basque. I told you about a dream about me crossing troubled waters and about my blue Bible being thrown in the water and becoming waterlogged and of no use to me anymore because it had ceased to be of any use to me whatsoever. And then I read to you from the Psalms from my new red Bible that I got from the Gideons. Yes, there are still hotels that have Gideon Bibles instead of internet pornography. In my day, when you went into a hotel room, no matter where you were on earth, in America at least, there was a Gideon Bible in the drawer. That was long before they put pornography into every room and destroyed and poisoned the soul of mankind. There's no Gideon Bibles left in most hotels because there's no profit in the Gideon Bible. The Gideons give the Bibles out for nothing. How do you compare that with a profit center where they can show women doing things to each other that the Bible itself would be ashamed to have reported 5,000 years ago? There's no profit center in a Bible. There's plenty of profit in vice. There's plenty of profit in vice in a hotel room. So why put a Bible in when you could squeeze $12 out of a poor lonely man who's on the road as a salesman with his wife and children at home when he can watch a despicable, disgusting representation of fake sexuality? When you can squeeze $12.95 out of him and it goes up on his hotel bill, not even as a rental of a movie, but as a miscellaneous charge which his company or he pays for. So that's why America today needs more, not less, of the Bible. And that's why I'm going to do more, not less, of the Bible in 2011, because we have no leadership. We have no inspiration. There's nobody leading the troops. There's nobody leading the Congress. There's nobody leading the people. And so each one of us has to become our own leader. I'm not intending to lead you anywhere. I'm not Moses. I don't intend to part the Red Seas. I don't intend to appear in a stadium and tell you I'm the Messiah. I am just telling you that each one of us must now reach back into our distant ancestral past and find that spark that leads us back to the divinity that's in all of us, because it is in us. Every man walking this planet, and it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor or humble or great or egotistical or lost, inside you there is an ember that still glows that with the proper oxygen can turn into a flame. And when that flame is lit inside of you, there's virtually nothing you can't do. I saw this in my own life when things had not worked for me. I told you the story, and I don't want to bore you with it again. I thought I was finished. Many, many years ago, I had reached a dead end in my life. I couldn't go on. I thought I was finished. I told you that. But I met a religious man. He told me that if you find God, you can move mountains. I didn't even know what he was talking about. It made no sense to me. I didn't understand what he meant by move mountains. I moved a mountain. I went from being unemployed to a best-selling author to a famous radio host, all because of that turning inside myself. It doesn't mean it happened with a presto, with a rod. I had to walk through glass. I had to walk over hot coals, and I still do every day of my life. But so what? That's what God wants me to do, so that's what I'm doing it for. So what I'm saying to you is, in a long and short of it, without sounding like I'm trying to give you a whole speech here, which I've already done, so forgive me, I'm telling you that within all of us, there's some kind of divine spark. And America right now has nobody breathing oxygen into the sparks within us on a national level. Yes, you may find it in yourself in a church or a synagogue now and again. Are you getting it from your political leaders? Are you getting it from the chief executive? Are you kidding me? You're getting it from Barack Hussein Obama, who won't even produce his birth certificate? A man who takes vacation after vacation and goes on golfing matches, and she lectures us, the first lady, about health food and every time slurping an ice cream cone. You have faith in these people? You'd be the first one that I met who does. Well, I've gone past my opening. I'll be right back. Well, it's an awful lot of energy for a Monday. I don't want to blow my voice out the first day back after a couple of weeks of vacation. So I'm going to take some callers and see what they have to say. Let's start in New York City on the Savage Nation by turning to WOR and Abraham. Abraham, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hello, good evening. I must commend you for being on the mark and so prescient, as you so often are. It's so interesting, Michael, when you mentioned earlier at the opening of the show about the fish dying in that river there.
40,000 fish, I believe, were found dead in a river in Arkansas.
40,000 fish, wow. As an Orthodox Jew, I'm very familiar with actually this actual week's portion of the Torah discusses the 10 plagues in Egypt. And believe it or not, the first one was the plague of blood, in which God struck the Nile River, which is the main waterway in Egypt, and lo and behold, thousands and thousands of fish, if not millions, were killed.
So my God. Whoa. And then 10,000 blackbirds fell out of the sky here in America? Don't tell me that's also in the Bible.
Well, you never know how to relate one part of the Bible to the other. You have a way of sometimes connecting the dots. Maybe if you thought about it, you'd be able to in this case as well.
Well, I'm sure if I searched long enough, I could find some relationship. So when God killed the fish in this was in Egypt, is that where?
Yes, it was. And it was
one of the plagues that he inflicted upon Egypt because of their evil ways, correct?
That's where it was basically for enslaving the Jews, correct.
Okay. So we can't use that as a reason for the dead fish here in America. Let us use the biblical analogy for a moment. Why would God strike the fish here in Arkansas? Why? Bill Clinton, as I said, hasn't visited for a long time, so far as I know.
No, I'm not just saying there is a connection between the two. I'm just saying how interesting it is that it falls out the 2 days after we break.
Yeah, yes, if you're a Bible-believing person, you find miraculous connections between everyday occurrences and what's found in the Bible. I agree with you on that point. Does anyone have an interpretation of my dream? We have the numbers guy coming up next on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, first day back after a long hiatus, enjoying the vacation like everybody else, eating too much, drinking too much, worrying too much, and here we are. Here we are, like everybody else, wondering where's the president? Why is he on vacation? Where's the leadership? Why are they out to lunch? Why are our men dying in Afghanistan? Nobody even knows what the mission is. How did they come up with such phony policies as they're running today? We ask these questions over and over again. How does a man as inexperienced as Timothy Geithner remain as Treasury Secretary while his friends feast on the tens of millions of dollars and none of them have been investigated by Congress? How is this possible, we ask ourselves. Incidentally, I enjoyed the movie Wall Street 2. I watched it on pay-per-view over the holiday. I thought it was great. I like Michael Douglas enormously. I can review it in 2 seconds, say, yes, it's worth watching. And B, I have no idea who the lead character was or the girl. I don't know why they were in the movie. She is not particularly good-looking. He is not particularly charismatic. I don't even remember their names. I don't know what they put him in the movie for. I don't know who looks at them. The whole movie was Michael Douglas. Maybe that's why they picked him, these younger actors, because they wouldn't in any way upstage him, perhaps. But I don't think this guy has to worry about being upstaged. He's just so charismatic. Here's a guy with cancer who could run rings around these young actors. They were horrible. She, as I say, had no cinematic appeal whatsoever. She supposedly played his daughter, you know, Gecko's daughter. And then the guy she's supposedly in love with, he was like some wimpy guy from Syosset. I don't even know who he was. I still don't know the actor's name nor why he was in the movie. There was no handsome. There was no Romeo and Juliet. It was nothing. But the movie was good. Very believable, although it was done by Oliver Stone, and therefore it had a mock Marxist perspective. Oliver Stone is the equivalent of a mock Tudor house. In other words, there's a Tudor house like you'd find in the Cotswold region of England, and then there's mock Tudors like you'd find in Jamaica Estates, New York, and in very other. And so Oliver Stone is sort of a mock Marxist like too many others in the Hollywood business. And so therefore, you know, he mildly attacks Wall Street when in fact his entire financial support comes from Wall Street, if you know what I'm saying. How do you make a movie today unless a banker underwrites it? How do you think a movie gets made? They go to Wall Street to ask him for money, unless Wall Street gives him the money. So who does he attack? Everyone except George Soros. Everyone is a villain in the movie except the Managed Funds Association, George Soros, and the people who really collapsed America. But, you know, you can make of it what you want. It was well done and very enjoyable, and I'd highly recommend it. Other than that, I have very little to say about the movie. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the Ohio, Gary, the numbers guy. Gary, welcome to 2011 on the Savage Nation. So let's not go in a long rigmarole. You say that you know what's coming in 2011. Tell us what's coming in 2011.
Let's start with this. 2011, you got to do the math like this. 11 is a master number, so you do 2 plus 11 equals 13. And what does the number 13 stand for? The number 13 stands for law and order. So I can promise you folks out there, there's going to be a lot more draconian laws passed that's going to make the 9/11 Patriot Act look like a joke. You can expect that this year because there will be more terrorist attacks this year, and I can tell you when they're going to happen. Not maybe that exact date, but whenever it's the 11th or the 29th of any month, because 2 plus 9 equals 11, that's when they strike.
What about 1-11-11, which is next Tuesday? I'm putting you on the spot because you told me that was going to be a big day.
What I said was 11-11-2011 for sure. But
hold on. What about 1-11-11? Is all that's ones? 1-11-11 is next Tuesday. What's going to happen?
If they're going to strike, they're going to strike on that day. What I mean by strike, whether it's a Muslim terrorist attack or whether it's a stock market crash or whatever it is, it always happens on the 11th or the 29th. So that's the first day you guys can expect some major drama to happen.
All right, let's pull back for a minute. This is all speculative. I've had you on before. I've enjoyed it before. When exactly is the State of the State, State of the Union speech by Obama? Is it the 20th? I don't know when it is.
The 20th of every year, but I couldn't tell you for sure.
Right. Is he still on vacation playing golf somewhere on Kailua because no one knows where Waldo is?
Oh, they can't find his birth certificate either. So
I think he's in Hawaii looking for his actual hard copy of the birth certificate, which is why he had to delay the vacation. So what else is coming in 11?
Okay, basically, I want to tell the people up north in Canada, you've escaped this recession to this point, but guess what? The drive's over. Now, Canada will go bust in 2011. And what I mean
Now, how could you make such a prediction based on what?
Very easily, because I was the one calling radio stations, obviously not yours, but in 2007 saying America's going to go bust. And no one believed me then. I'm telling the same thing's going to happen to Canada. The reason
But on what basis were you making such a prediction in 2007?
America's birthday. America's birthday is 7/4/1976. You take 7/4 plus the year it was in, 2007, it's going to add up to an 11. The same thing is going to go on with Canada right now. Canada was born 7/1. So you take the year Canada's last birthday was in, 7/1, and you take the year 2010, so you do 7/1/2010, and you have 11. So Canada will go bust this year.
Wow. But why? Oil's near $100 a barrel, and they have loads of oil. Actually, they might do better than ever.
Well, you know what? Commodities will go up, and especially I want to tell people this. Buy silver. Gold is not going to produce as much as silver. The commodities will go up. But
well, how do you make these predictions? Based on what? If you're a numerologist, what does it have to do with knowing about which country is going to go broke and when?
Okay, it's very simple. A life...
Let's take a deep breath, because we won't get anywhere, because all it is you're making predictions, and until one of them actually comes true, we don't know whether to believe you. So let's do this. Did you, Gary, happen to hear my dream about crossing troubled waters and my Bible being thrown in the water?
Yes.
What do you make of that dream?
I'm not a dream analysis, so...
That's fair enough. So let's do what I said in the dream, turn it into numbers. I'll bet you can convert that dream into numbers. There were three people, two dogs, and two books, okay? I'll start doing your job now. Three people, two dogs, and two books. No. Three people, two dogs, and three books.
Okay.
Three people, two dogs, and three books. Tell me what those numbers add up to.
Okay, basically two adds up to eight. Eight is the number of karma, money, and power. Let me give you an example how I know this. We all know China's the next superpower in the world. They started their Olympic Games on 8/8/2008. If you add everything up, 8/8 plus 2008 adds up to 26. 2 plus 6 equals 8. Now, a man could say that's a coincidence, right, Dr. Savage? Someone could say that. But here's the kicker. They started the Games at 8:08 p.m. No more coincidence.
Right. So now, what does 8 mean with regard to my dream? Three people, two dogs, and three books.
Karmic debt. Basically, the number 8 stands for power, money, not wealth, money, and karmic debt. Now, I can prove this to you, but you're gonna have to take.
Well, slow down. I'm listening to you. So, karmic debt meaning what? My karmic debt or someone else's karmic debt?
Yours, obviously. It's your dream.
So, if it's karmic debt, I'm going to get paid back, or I'm going to give payback?
Dr. Savage, you know, I'm not a psychic. I'm a numerologist.
You're as good as some of the gypsies I've visited in my lifetime, I got to tell you.
But let's just put it this way. I'm in no way a gypsy. I don't claim to be.
Hey, wait a minute. I like gypsies. I've always gotten along with them. Don't insult gypsies on my show.
Oh, I'm not.
Did I ever tell you what happened to the famous martial artist who insulted a gypsy? Did I ever tell you that story?
Please go ahead.
You're not going to believe it. I met a man, this must have been 8 years ago, older Chinese man. He was a wizard. He was almost as close to a ninja warrior as I've ever met. He could jump down a staircase and be on your neck before you even open the door. One of those guys. He was a famous teacher. I visited him. Someone told me about him. Nice guy, blah, blah, blah. I go to his house, and he was quite frail, and he was sick, and he told me what happened. A gypsy had come to his door for some reason, and he insulted her. For some reason, he didn't answer the... I don't know what happened. I don't remember the whole story. She came back the next day, and he opened the door again, and she puffed something in his face with a blow against the palm of her hand. She went, and he said he was never well again. He got sick and almost died. Go figure that one out.
Well, you know, everything deals with energy vibrations, Dr. Savage, and some people know how to use certain energies against people. I know that for a fact because I know people.
Absolutely true, 100% true. So let's take what you just said. It's very interesting. Remember a man called before when I was talking about faith and how we have to have faith and no one's giving us faith and no one's giving us inspiration. And he said, how can you believe in God protecting all of us when so many thousands of believers die? Millions died, in fact, in World War II. Millions of dying died in World War II who were good people, died for no reason because Hitler starved all of Leningrad. Hitler starved all of Stalingrad. What, did they all deserve to die? All of the Russian prisoners who were taken prisoner were starved to death by the Germans, by and large. Almost none of them came out of World War II. There are atrocities people don't even understand. How many of them were devoutly religious? I couldn't tell you. So I told him, well, when I was a kid, I'd watch a fight in a mock boxing match. And I'd see both fighters, Christians, get on their knees and pray to God. And I ask myself as a child, how could God have both of them win? If they both believe in God and they're both praying to God, why would God choose one over the other, I would ask myself. It made no sense. You understand what I mean? But on the other hand, the men had the faith that God was with them, which gave them the strength to go into that ring. So that's all that matters, is having the strength for the fight, not whether or not you are the one who is going to win. You need the strength for the fight is what it comes down to. And I am alleging that atheists don't have the same belief that a religious person does in a battle. And I would say that if you put an atheist who is equally matched with a believer in the same ring, the believer is going to win every time.
80% of atheists are liberals. Let's face that. I mean, you know where you're going there with atheists.
Well, but why do liberals... Okay, so let's say liberals are faithless. What do they believe in? Liberals do believe in something. They're not faithless. They just don't believe in God. Most liberals believe in a state. Most liberals believe in a large state government. Most liberals believe in government per se. And most liberals like laws that control everybody else but them. So they actually do believe in something. They believe in a sort of soft Stalinism as long as it doesn't bite them in the behind.
Well, what I will say about liberals is very plain and simple, Dr. Savage. Liberals want to impose their will on other people, and that's what a liberal is.
All right, we'll have to leave it at that, and I appreciate it. If you have any other predictions in the year that do come true, I'd like you to call the Savage Nation. Let's run to Maria in Pennsylvania. Maria, go ahead, please. You're listening to the Savage Nation, and now you're going to tell us something. What is it?
Yes, 11 years ago, I was living in Las Vegas, Nevada, 11 years ago, and I wrote a check, and it said 11, 11, 11. So it's very significant. Also, I would like to interpret your dream. The world is in such chaos. I'm in a minor court battle right now, and the judge forbid me to have a trial. Forbid me. So this is where we are as far as the decay of our world. But as for you in the dream, I feel this. It's about faith. It's about faith. Something that you treasured and that you loved was taken momentarily from you and seemed to be destroyed. But your wife, you said to her, throw the other ones quick so they can be saved. And she said, she had faith. She said no.
No. In the dream, she was on the other side of the creek, and after the Bible went in the water, she had two rare botanical books. She was going to toss them to me, and I said, no, I said, don't throw them. Leave them there. They will be safe because it's not raining. Then nothing will happen to them. In other words, the botanical books represent my past, and my past was left on the other side of that little creek. The Bible, which was thrown to me to be in the new part of the bank of the river with me, fell in the water and became useless. The Old Testament became useless to me. You understand that?
Well, but see, it correlates with what I said about the decay of the world. And yeah. I think another caller said the same thing. What you cherish no longer will be applicable. I mean, we are in such...
Yes,
such
I agree decay. With you. A lot of what I have cherished has died. I agree with you 100%. But I have not become faithless because I now have my red Bible placed by the Gideons, which contains both the Old and the New Testament. And in the Old Testament, I read the Psalms today, for example, which was from the Old Testament. And so therefore, I have found a new Bible. It's the same Bible.
Mr. Savage, let me tell you something. This is what I feel is going to... This is going to be your purification, your exaltation. I think something is going to happen, and it's going to depend. The reason the dream was cut off, because it's up to you. You said sometimes you falter, sometimes you believe in God, sometimes you don't. And I think it's something will come in your path, but it's about trust. And it's about belief. Okay, so you said it. So then it's about, absolutely, then I'm right. It's about faith. So you're going to win. You can win 1,100%, whatever it is.
Yes, the Psalms are all about defeating the enemies. That's correct, but it's not only for myself. I'm involved with this United Kingdom battle, which is going on into the third year now. It's costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it doesn't end because I'm fighting a government like Maimon itself. You cannot win when you fight a government. It's almost impossible. Nobody wins because they're a changing, revolving door of individuals who care less about the person. They don't care how much money it costs us. Do you know what I'm saying?
Do you hear
But listen to what the psalm says. You have delivered me from the strivings of the people. You have made me the head of the nations. A people I have not known shall serve me. Now, what is that all about? What nations is he talking about? Who were the psalms written for? Who were the psalms written for? Do you know the Bible?
For the people that... Did you hear what I said? A judge is trying to keep me from my constitutional rights for an amendment...
Now that I cannot comment on. We know that the courts are corrupt. We understand that the courts today are the equivalent of the Roman courts, where several pieces of gold probably can get you virtually anything that you want. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Just a dream. Just a dream.
Just a dream.
All our plans and all our schemes.
It is. Thank God that God gave man the genius to discover wine. That's all I can say. For months, I don't drink wine. I don't like it. Hot months, I can't even drink the stuff. I drink beer. I can't stand the weather here in the Northern California now. It's wet, damp, disgusting. Supposed to get sunny, but you're going to get a hit. If you're on the East Coast, you're going to get walloped in about 2 days with another snow and rainstorm that you don't even want to know about. You know, the weather moves that way. It's just the way it is. So we're through with our wet phase. It's going to be sunny. You're going to get hit with it. But I drink red wine at this time of year. When it gets wet, I love red wine. I get no hangover. I fell into an Antinori Tignanello of 2005. I love this wine. Love it. I have no relationship to the company. I don't know Mr. Antinori. I never met the man. I don't know his son. I don't know his olive oil business, whatever. But the 05 is a nice wine. I went to an Italian restaurant the other day, and they had it. I said, I want a Super Tuscan. So I got this. It was really surprising. So I went and bought two bottles from the restaurant at retail. They gave it to me at their cost. Not bad, you know what I mean? Drink a half a bottle a night. It reminded me of a story when I was a kid at my father's market. There was a guy named Petey. He was like a lowly guy who got sandwiches. He never, did very much. He ran for sandwich. Older man, but they always took care of the old guys around there. They'd go get a sandwich, hang around. They got out of the cold. They let him come in the store and warm up in the winter down there on Ludlow Street. So Petey was one of those guys, Italian guy, poor guy, poor as dirt, lived in a coal cellar somewhere. He drank a gallon of red wine, homemade red wine, every night. And they'd find him, at the bottom of he'd collapse from it. But you know what? I think he outlived everybody in the market. Petey would drink a bottle. I'm talking, in those days, I'll have a glass of wine. There was no such thing as a glass of wine to those guys. This guy held up that gallon. You remember those gallon bottles? I don't even think they still make them anymore. The homemade gallon. He didn't measure out 6 ounces like in a restaurant or three. You go in a restaurant, they measure it to a line. They give you a quarter of a glass of wine that a man would laugh at in my day. The guy tilted it over his shoulder and took a guzzle. He guzzled the wine like you would drink water after a baseball game in August. What I'm telling you is don't do it. Because you wind up like Petey at the bottom of the coal cellar, or like one of the Hollywood vermin in rehab after New Year's Eve. You don't need it. But that's just the difference in time, that's all. Everything's changed as the way it should. This is the Savage Nation. Be here.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Back on the Savage Nation post New Year's Eve. Half the audience is still either gone or here's what I did New Year's Eve. You think famous Michael Savage, you could have an audience of 20,000, and I could. I went out with Mrs. Savage and two friends New Year's Eve to a place that I frequent for the last 30 years on and off. It's a Basque restaurant up in San Rafael, California. Great place. It's like a home for me, called the Chalet Basque. The reason I like it is it's like stepping back into a French village. And it's just where the food's good, the prices are nice, no one bothers you, okay? So it was crowded, full, as I'm enjoying dinner. The waitress, who I like very much, Linda, gives me a book that she wrote. A little book. It's called If These Tables Could Talk, Worthy Tales from Soup to Nuts by Linda Hepworth. And I hope Linda's listening because she's a lovely person. She always has cute and undirty jokes that make me laugh. So she wrote a book about the various people who've come in the restaurant over the years. And one of the entries is called Famous Radio Man, from the book If These Tables Could Talk by Linda Hepworth from the Basque restaurant. And my boss, Roger, she writes, has a longtime friend who was a well-known radio host. This gentleman and his wife frequent the restaurant, and it is especially nice when Roger can sit down and spend time with them. They've all known each other for 30 years. The radio man often mentioned our restaurant on the radio, although never by name, but my friends called me saying that they had heard he had been there. She's talking about Le Chalet Basque. The radio man usually comes in with a hat on and his collar pulled up, trying to remain incognito, and sits in the back room alone as his voice is so recognizable. On occasion, he brings his little dog. The dog sits on the chair beside him and is treated to a hamburger well done with no seasoning the way the dog likes it. One time they brought the dog, Teddy, and he was sitting on his chair as usual. The radio man told me that the dog had already eaten and he wouldn't be getting his hamburger today. The dog heard this, cocked his little head and whimpered. We all erupted in laughter and the dog got his hamburger. The biggest event with this famous man was when I lost his credit card. He gave me the card and at the same time asked for a to-go bag, which I had to get in the kitchen. I didn't want to leave the card unattended near the credit card machine, so I took it with me into the kitchen. It disappeared just like that, vanished from its little tray. What do I do? Honesty is the best policy, so I went to the radio man and told him that I had just lost his credit card. He was very nice about it and started looking in his pocket saying, well, maybe he hadn't given it to me. But he had given it to me, and I had lost it. I panicked. I looked everywhere. Just inside the kitchen door was a big laundry bag with all the dirty tablecloths. The boss, now aware of what was going on, screamed at me, of all the people! And then he pitched into the dirty linen, going through everything, no card. I went back out to the famous customer who was waiting to leave with his driver. I told him that we hadn't found it. He was so nice about it, he said, look at you, so nervous over a piece of plastic. Don't worry, I'll cancel it when I get home. His voice was so calm, I almost started to feel better. Then he said, my wife's going to freak. I thought, oh dear me, she said. The radio man told me that I would probably find it 5 minutes after he left. So he and the driver went out to the parking lot to the car. I went into the kitchen, heaving a huge sigh of disappointment. As I relaxed and stepped back, there was the card to the left of me on the floor, hiding under a little shelf. It had apparently aeroplaned a few feet. I grabbed the card and rushed into the restaurant just as the driver was coming back in. The to-go bag had leaked and he was coming back in to get it rewrapped. With great relief, I handed the card to the driver. I still see the radio man. We're friends now, and I even asked him for an autograph from my aunt and uncle. We never mentioned the incident, and I hope he never told his wife. It's cute, okay? It doesn't shake the world up, but it just shows you something. How do you like that? I'm going to read you some headlines from MichaelSavage.com. 1,000 scientists challenge global warming in new report. Tyranny by decree. Over the past year, it has become obvious that what leftists cannot win at the ballot box, they will accomplish via bureaucratic dictate. No kidding, Obama. Ex-Reagan Bush aide killed and dumped in a landfill. This is a frightening story. He's 66 years old. He's a decorated Vietnam veteran. Last seen getting off an Amtrak train in Delaware, and he's found in a garbage dump. No comment. As I'm eating lunch, which was leftover Chinese from last night, I thought about dinner. You say, well, why don't you just cook your own food? I do as much as I can, but it's hard to cook your own food. It's a lot of work. So one family member says, why don't you get a chef? I don't want a chef. Then you have to eat the same food every day. And I don't trust anyone in the house that well enough anyway. I mean, because what if they're sick? You know what I mean? You don't know what anyone, the same, well, the same with a restaurant. I came from an immigrant family. They were not rich. They weren't poor. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to make into a big story that everyone was in poverty. They worked themselves out of poverty. But They didn't eat in restaurants much. In fact, I had relatives who never ate in a restaurant. They were a family, like almost like they whispered about them. They never won't go to a restaurant. It's not that they didn't want to spend the money. They didn't trust the food. Today, it's different. Everyone's equally sick wherever they eat. No matter where they eat, they come away feeling slightly ill. No, I eat in a restaurant. Just, you got to watch out certain foods, that's all. You want me to read his menu again? Or I don't want to read his menu. I had a buffet. I'm the only one. I told you about the buffet last week, the Indian takeout buffet. I sent my assistant. I won't even go to the buffet anymore. I had the assistant go there and get it for me. But you overeat in buffets anyway, you know, all you can eat. How can you go to a buffet and not come away feeling like slightly nauseous from it? I don't have that much self-control around an all-you-can-eat buffet. I can eat one plate and then leave. It's impossible. I cannot do it. So I tend to avoid buffets for that reason. That's why I avoid South Florida. All of South Florida is a buffet. There was one buffet near where I have a house in Florida. I knew they wouldn't last. Poor Chinese people. They hardly spoke English. They rented this monster, huge facility, and it was like you felt bad for them when you went in there. You know the type, like they don't quite understand the restaurant business, and they pooled their money. Oh, it was sad, and they put a buffet out. And the only people who went there were either very hard workers, illegal aliens, or whatever, and they ate like 5, 6, 7, 8 plates. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
The Department of Homeland Security works day in and day out with the NCTC and with other members of the intelligence community. These are dedicated men and women.
Oh, yeah.
All of them are dedicated to the safety of the United States.
Dedicated.
We simply had.
Look, I can't listen to it. I'm sorry. Dedicated this. Oh, men and women, brave. Everyone's brave and dedicated. They're all brave and dedicated. A bureaucratic hack of the highest order. Of all of them, I would say she's the least qualified for the position. What did she do to be worthy of the job of Department of Homeland Security? Does anyone have an idea? I don't know the woman. I know she failed as the governor of her state. She couldn't even protect the governor, the state that she governed, from a flood of illegal aliens. In fact, she worked on behalf of the illegal aliens to let them flood in. Is that why she was rewarded with this job? So we have governmental hacks, patronage positions, in very serious positions right now. If you'd rather not talk about it, we can talk about real estate. I'm perfectly happy to talk about real estate, if you'd like. We can talk about New York City, where Mayor Bloomberg has come out in favor of the heroin, how to shoot up a booklet that his so-called health department put out. You know, this is interesting to me, what bureaucrats really are and who goes into government. They're all incompetent from top to bottom. Generally, I knew this was when I was a graduate student. I used to hear talk in the halls of the campus that the best students never went into government, that the smartest people never went into government. There was always people who were looking for a pension. And that's what we have now. But these are times that are much different than in the past. You know what a bureaucrat is, but all right, we can't afford this anymore. The enemy, you know, never sleeps. The enemy is not bureaucratic. The enemy can innovate on the spot. The enemy is very smart. The enemy has war in his blood. The enemy has war in his DNA. And we have bureaucrats standing in our way of surviving. That's not a bad turn of events. That's a good turn of phrase. Over in Florida, there's a supermarket chain called Publix, which I like shopping in, but no more. They took Pearl Harbor Day off the calendar. Instead, they put in a holiday. You're not going to believe it, a Muslim holiday. That's right. You heard me. The Publix supermarket chain, which is sort of like the Safeway of Southern Florida, has a 2010 calendar that has an Islamic New Year date in it of December 7th, but no Pearl Harbor Day. The day that the Japanese had an attack on Hawaii, killing 2,350 and injuring 1,177 Americans and pulling the United States into World War II. You hear this? This is in Florida on Publix. So they're celebrating a Muslim holiday, but they forgot about Pearl Harbor Day. That gives you an idea of what's going on in your country today. Now, who do you blame for this? It's a systemic failure at Publix that caused this to happen. No one is to blame. We have dedicated men and women at Publix who put out the calendar every year. And the buck stops here. Cock-a-doodle-doo. So, let's hear a little bit. Let's hear clip 19 now from the Commander-in-Chief.
I've directed agency heads to establish internal accountability reviews and directed my national security staff to monitor their efforts. We will measure progress.
Aspiring model found burned and thrown in a trunk in Miami. Horrible story. I don't even want to go into it. Tiger's Jupiter home. He intends to finish building. Well, he may need a bigger home now that the wife is gone. You know, a room for each of his girlfriends. That would be a 100-room house. Ah, poor Tiger Woods. Poor Tiger Woods. Aspiring model found burned in North Miami trash bin. Oh, my God. Paula Sladowski and her boyfriend flew into South Florida to spend New Year's Eve at a Lady Gaga concert at Miami Beach's posh Fontainebleau. Posh. When I was a kid, it wasn't posh. When it was built, it wasn't posh. It was the Borscht Belt in the sun. On Sunday night, police found the body burned beyond recognition at a dumpster in North Miami. The body later identified through a dental records was that of the 26-year-old Sladowski. Oh, my God. How does a thing like this happen? What? North Miami police said Sladowski was last seen Sunday about 7 at Miami's Club Space. She was with her boyfriend, Kevin Klim. The two got into a fight at the club. I like tabloid stuff. Kim told authorities he wanted to leave because she was too drunk. She yelled at him and bounces threw him out of the club. He took a taxi to their Miami Beach hotel and told police it was the last time he had seen her. Well, my God. So she went out with someone from the nightclub who gave her the business and then set her on fire? I don't know what to say about this anymore. I've never been in a nightclub in my life. Maybe there's something wrong with me. I don't go to nightclubs. When I hear club, I don't understand what it is. What do you go there for? What do you need in a nightclub? To see other drunks sitting around in a nice outfit? What is a nightclub? It's like a bar is a blue-collar place to have a drink, right? Like a VFW hall that has a bar. That would be a bar or a bar in the corner. What is a club? It's a bar with, like, fancy booths and expensive drinks? You know, it's not that I have sympathy for their attitude, the extremists, but it's that I understand a part of it. The first rule of warfare in business or in war or terrorism is know thy enemy. Know thy enemy. And you better understand your enemy very clearly. And I think that this goes to the systemic failure of our government. They don't understand the enemy at all. They haven't the slightest idea what the enemy's all about nor what his grievances are. Let's start with the social perversion of the United States of America. Let us start with the moral meltdown of the family in America. Let us talk about the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood. Let us talk about the sewer pipe that is broadcast into every television set in every home in America. Let us talk about the fact that even the Mormon-owned Marriott hotel chain, which once had Bibles in every room, now has internet pornography available at the touch of a button. Let us talk about the fact that we're living in the most degenerate nation in the history of the world. A nation that would make ancient Rome look like look cleaner. Let's put it to you that way. There's no analogy. So now you're a medieval man, and you read the Quran, and you go to the mosque six times a day. You have a wife and you have daughters, and you look at them, and then you look at the American girls with the bleached hair, the skirts up to their crotch, puking on themselves in Hollywood, held up as role models. You see the geniuses in Hollywood and what they're producing, and you say, no, I'd rather die than let this filth come into my home. I'm not going to let it happen. I'm willing to sacrifice my life to prohibit these degenerates, these weakling degenerates, from destroying my culture. Now you say, well, do I sympathize with them? No, I don't. Because although everything I have said is accurate and true, killing is worse than all of the other things I have mentioned. Murdering innocent people is far worse than the disgusting behaviors that I have mentioned. And so don't accuse me of having sympathy for the enemy at all. But I'm telling you where some of them are coming from. And I'm telling you why it's easy to recruit a lot of people who otherwise would not be recruited. It's the social policies of America primarily, not the foreign policies. Make no mistake about it. We keep hearing it was because Bush went to war in Iraq Maybe that was the issue. The issue really is the social pollution that comes out of America that the fanatics capitalize on. And you never read this or hear this anywhere. You never see this analyzed, do you? But I'm the best at analyzing things in the entire media, in the whole world. There's nobody better than Michael Savage for analyzing things on a macro scale. Nobody's ever been better than me. I bring knowledge. I bring a steel trap for a mind. I believe the best education in the history of the media and a knowledge of history that's incomparable. Nobody can match me. And I'm telling you, what I just said to you is the single biggest reason that we have the problems that we have in the world. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Michael. I want you to know that you are what makes America great. There may be some great Americans, but you make America great, and I appreciate everything you do. I'd like to also make a quick comment. My mother, God rest her soul, loved your... She was from Mount Vernon, New York, and lived in Houston. Mm-hmm. And she loved your stories about New York. It always thrilled her heart.
You know, everybody loves the stories, and I know there's a commonality in it. What unites the listenership most about my stories, even those who don't like my politics, is the fact that they're from the heart, and stories that are true and from the heart generally ring true.
Savage.
Sometimes I get a Muslim callers who agree with me. I wish that one I'd call me right now and say, I agree with you. In other words, did you hear my analysis? And you know it's right. I mean, we hear about our foreign policy triggering people willing to die for the cause, so to speak. But you never hear that it's our social policy, social policies. And I believe that I am correct. In fact, I've written many bestsellers on the subject, amongst other things. We're talking about that. We're talking about Obama's speech. I mean, you know, you watch the guy, and he seems to be looking different to me. I think he's actually, he's starting to look as though he actually knows the danger we're in, and he also knows how incompetent his government is. But to say that the buck stops here and it's a systemic failure, saying no one's responsible. You got to fire somebody for the people to take you seriously. Why is he holding on to everyone is sad. A boss fires people who are incompetent. No, I don't care what the job is. You run a burger stand. You serve a tainted burger. So you what do you do? Let's say you serve a tainted burger. Let's say you own a McDonald's franchise and it goes along well. And then one day somebody gets food poisoning from a hamburger from your particular McDonald's. A review is done by the owner. What does he say? I'm responsible, but no one's going to be fired. It's a systemic failure of the entire McDonald's store? No, what he's got to say is the man who was supposed to check the meat is getting fired. Or the man who was supposed to check the temperature of the meat after it's cooked is getting fired. You follow him? Somebody got to get fired in order for you to want to go into the hamburger stand again. Or you stop going into that particular hamburger store, right? Well, we have no choice. This guy owns the hamburger store called America, only he's firing nobody, so you'll have another tainted burger tomorrow. You'll have another poison burger tomorrow, and he'll give another speech that although we investigated thoroughly after the would-be bomber, and we conducted an across-the-board surveillance and reanalysis, and everyone reported to everyone even more than they were reporting before, and they stopped being on the ski slopes for as long as they were, we had another incident. This time he really blew up and killed 3,000. But we're still not firing anybody because although it was a systemic failure last time, this time it's really a systemic failure. And boy, I'll tell you, if it ever happens again, then I can guarantee you we're really going to investigate why there was another systemic failure. Pardon me for my sarcastic view of things. But I believe that we're living in a very dangerous nation right now because college types, left-wing college types, are running everything. The country is as open as a sieve. Illegal aliens are crawling across the border and busting us. Do you hear about Arizona? Did you hear that story? It's up on michaelsavage.com. Arizonans are owed $1 billion from illegal immigration. Finally, someone did the math. For 15 years, I've been telling you how much they cost us. The cost of illegal immigration has exhausted the Arizona State Treasury. Now, I've told you over and over again that the reason states are bankrupt is because of the cost of medicating them, jailing them, giving them social services, and then paying no taxes, sending it home to Mexico and elsewhere. And every governor, they lie to you. We don't know why we have a budget deficit, says Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, every citizen in the street knows why we have a budget deficit. There are too many government employees, and illegal aliens don't pay taxes, and put a highway patrolman in front of every hospital in the state and say no, no ticky, no residency, no treatment. Unless it's catastrophic and life-threatening, you got to treat the people. I accept that. But by and large, you don't treat common cold with a $3,000 visit to the emergency room with eight translators, do you? That's what we do here in the state. No one knows why it's broke. He can't figure it out, the muscle man. All right, play music for me now. Ready? I'm hitting a point. I made my points. You can play any rock and roll for me. Huckleberry Finn needs music right now in order to keep going. Huckleberry needs... Wait a minute, stop. No, no, no. Didn't you get me Offenbach for today? You said you had Offenbach. Where is it? That's what I'm talking about. Now you're talking. I wish I had been born in 1870. I would like to have been a cohort of Toulouse-Lautrec. Nice, different age. Gas lamp era. Prior to that nasty Edison. It's not exactly what I want. Do you have the Follies Bergère, or is this it? No, 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 no. That's some simpy New York. That's close, 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 close. I see the Can-Can girls and the Garters and all of the drunk Frenchmen in the audience. Da, 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 da. Come on, who doesn't love this? An innocent time in the world. The War of 1812 was over. The U.S. Civil War was over. Everybody knows this, right? Can't you just see them on the stage dancing? This is free electricity, isn't it, guys? It's a different era. There were no problems like today. Nothing. Different world. All right, and I made my point. Sometimes I drift off in reveries, and I used to dream, and people used to say, if you could be born any time, where would you like to be born? I hope God's not listening, because he's liable to say, all right, I heard that. I was listening to your show. I had nothing to do with it. What happens the day I go to, like, to heaven? And God says, I was listening. Didn't you say that you wanted to be born in 1870? No, I'm just kidding, God. Well, no, I take you seriously. I mean, you think you're so important. So you're going to be reborn in 1870 in France. No, please. I don't want to eat rotten cheese. Please. I don't want to live in a place where there's no hot running water. And although I like garlic, God, I don't want to be around everybody else who has garlic breath, if you don't mind. There was no mouthwash in those days. I could turn it into a show topic. When would you like to be reborn? You know, if you could pick it, what would it be? I just always liked that period. I even liked the art of that period. All of the Impressionists were painting around then. I mean, through certainly 30 years and more beyond that, but that's about when it began. If my Art 101 memory, you know, is still operational. All right, you'd rather talk about the safe, Obama and he turned gray. Remember I said the other day he looked like gray hair? Remember Obama, when he turned gray, when I saw him coming out of the theater. Morgan Freeman, I said on the air, and then everyone noticed it. Remember Drudge put the picture up of him, he looked gray. It was unbelievable. He turned gray in Hawaii. That's from the food over there. No, I mean, the guy never thought it would be this difficult. It's a rough job. I would never want a job like that. Who would want a job? Would you ever want to be president? I don't understand who wants these jobs. How could you live with such terrible, every second, the fear? A fear of something every second. When do you rest with a job like that? I'm not made for politics because, A, I'm not corrupt. B, I don't like to raise money. C, I don't want to beg for money. And D, I mean, who can sit through meetings and point fingers when things go wrong? So that's why we have the people we have in government. Nobody with any real, really wants to be in government unless you're a grifter and you can't make a living the honest way. I don't know what to say anymore. I'm bumbling along here. We have a Maginot line called the TSA and Homeland Security. Remember the French had a Maginot line? They built a set of fortifications between the Atlantic Ocean that ran all the way up, I think, to the Swiss Alps, if I'm not mistaken. They thought that the Germans would not be able to penetrate the Maginot line of fortifications. The Germans just went around the Maginot line and invaded France. I think that that's what we have here in America. We have an imaginal line. Under Obama, we have an imaginal line, an imaginary line of defense. And he's trying to explain why the imaginal line, not the Maginot, but the imaginal line, the imaginal line with all of these integrated bureaucracies is going to defend us against the next terrorist attack. I think the imaginal line is easily penetrated. And you know what? Now we're looking for the next crotch bomber. And then next time they come, my readings tell me they're going to come at us with aerosolized sprays with botulism on the airplane or something even worse that'll kill people instantly on the airplane. I mean, you're looking for the crotch bomber. They're already on to the aerosolized spray of toxins on an aircraft. How do you protect against that? Where could they hide an aerosolized spray, I wonder? I don't know. How can they get that on a plane? If they aerosolize a spray, how would they get it on a plane? Like a Bianca? Like a mouth spray? That's not enough. Is there enough in there in a puff in a Bianca? You can't take it? I think eventually we're going to wind up flying naked. Everyone will be wanting stripped on a plane, flying naked, strapped to a chair. Your clothing will be put, it'll be like Auschwitz on an airplane. Pardon me. You have to check your clothing when you get on the airplane. You put it in the back of the plane. It's horrible, and everyone takes a seat naked on the plane. They'll do anything except racially profile or nationally profile people, which is the logical conclusion. You either racially profile, or you profile by religion, or you profile by nation of origin. Or you may as well wind up flying naked. That's all there is to it. Because if you keep going at this level, it's impossible. You're not going to stop them. There's no other way to stop them but knowing, admitting to yourself where it's all coming from. Yeah, put that in the newspaper, see if I care. I really don't care what you say about me anymore because I know I'm right and everybody knows I'm right. Everybody is saying this. I am expressing the voice of common sense in the United States of America, and everyone's saying the same thing. We are fed up with this left-wing government. We are fed up with bureaucrats who are incompetent. We all know that they can't defend us. Don't hear about brave men and women devoted to the country. They're devoted to their pension. That's what they're devoted to. That's the brave men and women devoted to their pension. Stop already with how brave they are. I'm sick of hearing this garbage.
Savage.
All right, look, here's what we're talking about. The security report came out, and that's why Obama had to step out and give the speech, which was, of course, tepid and took no responsibility and fired nobody. But it turns out that the Nigerian Muslim with extremist ties paid cash for a ticket. He boarded a U.S.-bound jet with no passport. Did you hear this? And to make matters even more shocking, so-called officials knew that they had an extremist on board the plane en route to Detroit, and they did nothing. In fact, the head of the intergenerational Department of Security, Leiter, wouldn't come off the ski slopes to give you some idea of how incompetent these people are. So when they say that you're going to read this with shock, you're going to see the litany of errors which emerged, which enabled a 23-year-old Nigerian Muslim with known terrorist ties, who paid for his ticket with cash, checked no luggage on an international flight, okay, no passport now, but there was a failure at every level. DHS disclosed that would-be bomber had ties to terrorism. Okay, what do you mean they found it out? They were going to stop him? Why didn't they alert the crew that a potential security risk was aboard the aircraft and tell them to turn back? Why? See, I don't believe a word the government's saying. They're covering their tracks. And according to ABC News, various intelligence reports suggest that there could be, quote, more than a dozen other Muslims trained for suicide missions against U.S. aircraft. And that's why the administration is racing against time. So now he's going to promise an increase in the number of sky marshals. I don't know if that's good or bad, unless they're able to, you know, how are they going to, what are they going to do with sky marshal? Would a sky marshal have jumped over three seats? I wonder. I really wonder. And so the Department of Homeland Security, Big Sis, in other words, is now looking for volunteers to undergo rapid training for overseas sky marshal and embassy protection positions. You hear? The Big Sis is now going to be the trainer. She's going to run them through the fire hoops. Well, I don't know what's coming next, but, you know, you got to pull back for a minute. Let's pull back for a minute. Why are all of these things happening? Why has there been a cluster of attacks in America? The Fort Hood massacre, Muslim. The Nigerian, Muslim. You know, there's been quite a few, right? A cluster. Why do you think they're coming now? I have an idea. Remember after Obama was elected? Remember for a long while there were no serious attacks or threats against America by Al-Qaeda? And we were saying, well, why is that? Why do you suppose they're not attacking? The answer was people were saying, well, because they kind of have their man in the White House in a way, a guy who's soft. He's certainly not a plant, but Obama is soft on terrorism. He's apologized to the Muslim world, and they figure he's somewhat friendly to them, and he's not going to crack down on them. So they figure, leave it, you know, don't stir up America. Now all of a sudden you see all of these things happening. Now why? I've been thinking about it. I woke up 4 in the morning and asked myself why, and my subconscious answered me, and it said, here is the answer, Master, since you have fed me well today. Since you have given me a sufficient quantity of victuals, I will give you the answer, Master. And so the subconscious said, Michael, here is the reason why. Now keep up the good work with the victuals and the good quality fish. And I will reward you with insights every evening at this time, Master. You agree with me that that's where we're getting attacked? Is because Obama decided to ramp up the war in Afghanistan? No, you're going to disagree with me. The man who cried wolf didn't tell it to you this morning, the golfer? Boy, did he milk that one. The man who cried wolf, the golfer who cried wolf. 5 days, almost got it, didn't get it, didn't get it, I did get it, I almost got it, I didn't get it. I mean, that's what happens when you had a young girlfriend and you use male enhancement tablet, and you think that it's the big one. What's the big secret here? I don't know how you can't. We're analyzing things. Why can't we analyze that? That's off limits? That's off limits. If I'm analyzing the president nakedly and it's psychological nudity, let's do it to the golfer. We don't have tough men running America. We have calculating men. We have devious men. We have shrewd men. But none of them are tough enough for the times we are living in. None of them are tough enough to face the animals that would cut your throat, that would slash your daughter's throat in front of your eyes and throw it down a well. None of these men are tough enough for the job. Do you understand what I said to you? Now I'll go a step further. And this is going to be tough for many of you to take. If you were to turn the clock back to the FBI of the 1960s, the late 60s, during the J. Edgar Hoover period, when there was an attempt to overthrow the American government by the American left. And if you were to look at the dossiers that the FBI was compiling on the Weather Underground and on radical fellow travelers, you would recognize that they have taken over America. I don't know how to put it to you, but this country has been taken over by radical college communists. Make no mistake about it. They're vicious and they're shrewd. But they're not tough enough to face off against the enemies that would cut your throat and throw you down a well. That's my opinion. There's only one thing that could save us, and that's profiling, profiling, and more profiling. The whole concept of profiling is a construct of the enemy himself. The whole idea that we're even talking about it shows that they've already beaten us. They've already beaten us halfway to the goal posts. A triple there. You got a triple there.
You got to put an Irish nun in a wheelchair at a TSA, and you'll see how tough they can be. Oh, I've seen them go through Irish nuns' wheelchairs. I've seen them frisk diapers of two-year-old white babies. And so, as I say, the enemy has 50% down the goal already. 50% to the goal already. They've got you beaten because you won't even look them in the eye and say, I don't trust you. I don't like the way you look. I don't like your eyes. I don't like what you look like. I think you're going to blow this plane up. Go over there. We're going to strip you. That's what has to happen in order for us to survive. And if you think that I'm wrong, it shows you how brainwashed you are. I'll tell you right now that unless we get men capable of killing the killers, we're dead. Savage.